Welcome to the Food Revolution Summit, where we explore how you can heal your body and your world with food. This is Ocean Robbins, and I am joined by my dad and colleague, John Robbins, in welcoming our guest, Will Bulsiewicz, MD. Dr. Will Bulsiewicz is the New York Times best-selling author of Fiber Fueled, the plant-based gut health program for losing weight, restoring your health, and optimizing your microbiome. He is board certified in internal medicine and gastroenterology, and founder of the Gut Health MD, which has grown to become one of the internet's most trusted sources for gut health tips and advice. Dr. Bulsiewicz is author of more than 20 articles published in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Every day, he helps patients to bounce back from restrictive and overhyped diets and into a whole new way of living and eating that produces the results they really want permanently. So now, Will, we are so glad to have this time with you. And now for the interview, I'm going to hand it over to my dad and colleague, John Robbins.
Well, thank you, Ocean, for that introduction. And thank you, Will, for being with us today.
John, it's a pleasure to be here with you. You are a hero. You've done amazing work your entire life, and I'm just honored to share the microphone with you.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you for your work, which is outstanding in so many respects. And I know you were raised on a standard American diet, and it was normal in your house. You've written about this, to eat Doritos and drink Purple Saurus Rex Kool-Aid every day. And then in college, you drank 2 liters of soda a day. And in medical school, and even when you began practicing, your diet, if anything, got worse. And yet now, here you are, one of the foremost advocates of healthy eating on the planet. Will, how did this transformation occur?
I was the guy who was 30 years old, very well accomplished professionally. I was the chief medical resident at Northwestern, one of the top programs in the entire country. I was on a grant from the National Institute of Health. I was giving talks at national meetings. I was publishing papers. To an outsider, they would look at this and say, man, everything is going well for you. I didn't feel that way. I was miserable. I looked in the mirror and saw someone who was 50 pounds overweight. I was constantly tired, depressed, low energy, tons of anxiety, high blood pressure. And I was not the person who I remembered being. And I knew that something had to change. And the unfortunate thing is that despite the accolades, despite training at elite institutions, some of the top institutions in America, I didn't know how to fix myself. My toolbox filled with prescriptions and procedures couldn't get the job done. And what changed everything for me was meeting my wife. She ate a plant-based diet. I had never even been around someone like that before. And I was initially just very curious, like, what's going on over there? She's not getting the ribeye? Huh? And yet what I saw was a person who was healthy, and her health was effortless. Her weight was effortless. She looked amazing. She felt amazing. She was cleaning her plate. She was satisfied. She was enjoying her food as much or more than me. And I said to myself, maybe it's the food that I was raised on. You know, even though this is the way that our family has consumed food for generations, maybe this is the problem. And that opened my mind to the possibility that maybe nutrition could be the solution. And it led me down a path that ultimately brought me to where we are today.
And where you are today is you're saying that food is the number one determinant of health and disease in a person's lifetime. Well, there's something about Western medicine that doesn't recognize the power of nutrition as a rule. And even in gastroenterology, which is a specialty where you would think that if anywhere Western medicine would be thinking about nutrition and its power to affect health and disease, that would be the place. But it hasn't been. Now, you're saying that food matters a great deal. Can you explain why you say that?
The unfortunate reality, as you're alluding to right now, is that our healthcare system is designed to create patches, to cover things up, to put fingers in holes. But it is not designed to get to the root of the problem. And we miss an opportunity for prevention because of the way that we approach healthcare problems in the United States. We wait until the bomb has already exploded to clean up the mess instead of simply defusing the bomb before it ever went off. Our problem is diet and lifestyle. The standard American diet, the way that we eat, is perhaps the worst diet in the history of humanity. Like, not just right now on the planet, like literally in the history of humanity. 60% processed foods. What is that? We strip the fiber out, we pour chemicals in, and then somehow that's making up 60% of our calories. 30% animal products in the United States. The average American eats more than their body weight in meat on a yearly basis. Our weight on average in the United States has gone up 30 pounds in the last few decades. And so here we are with the worst diet in the history of humanity. We're sedentary, we're indoors, we're exposed to chemicals. And effectively what we've done, John, is we've created a system to destroy the living microbes that are inside of us. And we suffer the consequences. If the root of the problem is diet and lifestyle, then the solution needs to begin with diet and lifestyle.
You mentioned the microbial milieu within us. From the birth of our species, we have co-evolved with the microorganisms that live within our bodies. Now, some of the leading scientists and researchers who are studying the human microbiome today say we are experiencing an extinction within that parallels the extinction of species that is gripping the planet. Could the decline in the diversity within our microbiomes be partly responsible for the skyrocketing rates of so many Western diseases?
No question. There is no question at this point that the alteration to the gut microbiome, and I think it warrants at this point, John, initiating an introductory conversation on what is this gut microbiome that we are talking about, covering us from the top of our head to the tip of our toes, are invisible microbes, and they are everywhere. All external surfaces are covered with these invisible microbes. If you were to look at your thumb right now, I would encourage all the listeners at home, look at your thumb. Literally right there, there are as many microbes as there are people in the UK. And these microbes are predominantly concentrated inside of our colon. That's where you'll find about 38 trillion microbes. Now, let me try to explain how huge this number is. In order for me to meet 38 trillion, we would need to take all of the stars in the sky, all of them, every single star in our galaxy, and compact it down. And we would have 100 galaxies full of stars to equal the number of microbes living inside of every single one of us right now. And they are there with a purpose. You mentioned co-evolution. There has never been a human in the history of this planet that was sterile. We have always had a relationship with these microbes. We rose and we fell together. When we live, they get to live on. And when we pass, they perish too. We have a symbiotic relationship with them. They want to see us be successful. And through that process, over millions of years of human evolution, we have grown to trust them. They are connected to our metabolism, to 70% of our immune system, to our hormones, to our mood, our cognition, to our nutrition, to the availability of nutrients, to our digestion, even to the expression of our genetics. And you take a step back for a moment and you realize that the most powerful thing in all of human health isn't even human. It's these gut microbes. And the problem, John, is that they are an ecosystem in the exact same way that the Amazon rainforest is, in the exact same way that the Great Barrier Reef is. And ecosystems thrive on biodiversity, thrive on harmony and balance, as many different species living together as possible. That is the measure of health within any ecosystem. And when you burn the rainforest, or when you destroy the coral reef, you are affecting biodiversity within that ecosystem, and that has a ripple effect, which leads to extinction events and instability within the system. The exact same thing that is happening globally as we speak. You know, literally there are a million species, John, that are being threatened with extinction on this planet right now. And simultaneously, extinction events are occurring within our micro ecosystem inside of our colon. And when you lose those microbes, you create instability within the system. And the manifestation of instability within the system has been connected to metabolic disease, immune disease like autoimmune conditions, hormonal issues, mood disorders, brain conditions, even, of course, digestive issues. And so there are so many different ways that the gut microbiome is critical for human health. And the opposite is also true, which is that when you harm the gut, you are harming the human.
In your book, Will, you write about the husband and wife team at Stanford School of Medicine, but the microbiologists, Justin and Erika Sonnenberg. And I'm glad you wrote about the work. I know them. They've been speakers in our Food Revolution summits. And they told me that a few years ago, they decided to take steps to boost their own family's microbial diversity, to enhance the diversity within their microbiomes. And to do that, they took a number of steps. They revamped their diet. They threw out all processed foodstuffs from their kitchen. They began eating lots of veggies and whole grains. They got a dog. They began hand milling their own wheat and making their own sourdough bread. They took up gardening. And then, after a few years of this, they compared their archived microbes from years back with recent ones. And the results were rather amazing. They discovered that their microbial diversity had increased by half, which is a huge difference. Will, what do you make of this experiment that the Sonnenbergs undertook?
Well, first of all, the Sonnenbergs, you know, for the people who are listening at home, we are talking about some of the leading researchers literally on the planet when it comes to the gut microbiome. They're doing labs, they're doing research from the bench to the bedside, they're doing laboratory work, they're literally going out into the field and working with native tribal people in Tanzania. So I celebrate the work of this family. You know, I think, John, that when we think about what they described, this is, of course, compelling and not surprising to me. Everything that the Sonnenbergs did that you just described has been backed up by clinical research to suggest that these are the steps that will improve the health of our gut microbiome. And I think that the important take home for the person at home for what they did is this. Your gut is forgiving. Your gut wants you to thrive. Your gut is not permanently damaged. It is adaptable. And the choices that you make, beginning first and foremost with the 80,000 pounds of food that you consume during your lifetime, those choices have the ability to determine the makeup of your gut microbiome. And by determining the makeup of your gut microbiome, have tremendous influence on health outcomes during your lifetime.
I'm sure our listeners want to improve the health of their microbiome and have health, physical, mental, spiritual health throughout their lives. Well, if we're going to have a flourishing and diverse collection of beneficial bacteria in our digestive tracts and elsewhere in our bodies, if we're going to lower our incidence of Western diseases, do we need to eat more overall plant fiber in our diets? And also, do we need to eat a wider diversity of types of plant fiber?
We need both. There just is no question. There just is no question. And it's crazy to think about this, that we could be starving. Here we are, the United States of America. 70% of us are overweight. 40% are obese. This is unprecedented levels of issues with weight control in the United States right now. And yet we are starving. The nutrient that is missing from our diet the most is dietary fiber. And the reason that this is problematic is that the preferred food of our gut microbes is fiber. They love it. This is everything that they want to eat. Believe it or not, these microbes, they are as alive as you and I are, John. They are alive. They have their own personalities. They have their own skill sets. Not every single one does the same thing. And they have their own dietary preferences. But their preferred food is fiber. And when fiber comes into contact with your gut microbes, they thrive. They grow stronger. They become more capable of doing the work that we're asking them to do. And then they turn around and they pay us back. They pay us back through the production of short-chain fatty acids. But these microbes, the issue is that we're starving them. Now, here we are in the United States, and 95% of Americans are not even getting the minimal recommended amount of fiber. The minimal recommended amount of fiber, not optimal. We're not even hitting the minimal amount. And so the average American is 15 to 17 grams of fiber per day. Women should be at least 25. Men should be 38. We're not even coming close. One of the important points, and one of the things that I want people at home to understand and take away from this talk, is that fiber isn't just fiber. Fiber is a word that we use to describe a complex family of carbohydrates. You know, it's like using the word protein. We all know that protein's not all the same. The protein from a bean is not the same as the protein from a fish. Same is true with fiber. There are many different types of fiber that exist in nature. They are incredibly complicated from a biochemistry perspective, but each type of fiber, which you will find in different types of plants, will feed specific families of microbes. So for example, when you eat black beans, there are certain families of microbes that will thrive because you included black beans in your diet. And the flip side is also true. You take black beans out of your diet, and those microbes, they're starving. Well, the problem is we've taken most of the fiber-containing foods out of our diet. So here we are, and we have these microbiomes that are starving, losing diversity, basically like decaying down into dysbiosis, which is a damaged gut, and then we manifest these diseases. If we want to optimize our gut microbiome, it's not just getting the grams of fiber. In fact, I'll be honest with you, myself, I don't count grams of fiber. You know what I do? I count plants, because diversity of plants is the most important factor when it comes to optimizing our gut microbiome. Every single unique plant has unique types of fiber that will feed unique microbes. The measure of health is biodiversity. And if we want to enhance biodiversity, the way for us to do that is to eat as many different varieties of plants as possible.
Well, if each type of plant provides a unique type of fiber, as you're saying, and I know that's true, and if each type of microbe in our guts needs a different type of fiber, then it would follow that we need many, many different types of plants in our diet to get the many different types of fiber in order to feed the diversity of microbes that we need to be healthy. Well, does this mean that we can't just eat pounds of kale and or some other superfood and expect our guts to remain in tip-top shape?
The beauty of these plants is that you don't need to fixate on just getting one or some specific superfood out of the Amazon or something of that variety. Instead, we just need to stick with the fundamentals, classic foods, fruits, vegetables, whole grains, seeds, nuts, legumes, but in abundance, in diversity. And when it comes to this issue, diversity of plants, I turn to the largest data set, which is called the American Gut Project. It's called the American Gut Project, but it actually includes 45 different territories and countries. And this large data set allows us to make connections between our diet, our lifestyle, and the health of our gut microbiome. And when they analyzed it, they found that there was one clear-cut predictor of a healthy gut microbiome that stood out from the pack, stood out above the rest. The single greatest predictor of a healthy gut microbiome is the diversity of plants within our diet. It's clear-cut. It is the most important thing. Our food system is not designed to introduce us to dietary diversity. If we want diversity within our diet, we have to break the wheel. We have to be the ones to step up and make this a part of our routine. And the way that you do that is making this your dietary philosophy, whether you're in the supermarket, at the salad bar, at the kitchen table. This should be your philosophy. Diversity of plants, diversity of plants, diversity of plants.
Then I would think that the diversity of plants should be on our minds every time we eat. We should be maybe counting the number of plants that are in our dinner.
I think that the best way to do this, to be totally honest with you, John, is to have fun with it. You know, food is not meant to be stressful. Food is meant to be delicious, and it's supposed to be something that we enjoy. Look, the reality is many times I come home from work. I work full time as a gastroenterologist. Many times I'm exhausted. Come home. We're going to have some spaghetti and tomato sauce. Okay, well, that's not very much diversity of plants. But you know what? We can do this. We can make that work. It's quite simple. Put the sauce on the heater and open up the fridge and let's see what we got. Garlic, onions, mushrooms, zucchini, maybe some greens like spinach or some kale. Get all of those in there. I'm sure that our listeners at home are probably thinking in their mind, oh man, I would also add this. I would add this one and that one. Keep adding them. The sauce starts simmering. It's fragrant. The house smells amazing. Your kids helped to make it. They're like super excited. Hey, who made this? We did, Daddy. You go to serve it up. You get out the fresh basil, the fresh parsley. You just took spaghetti and tomato sauce and turned it into 9 different plants. It didn't really take you any time or effort to do that. This is what I'm talking about.
It sounds delicious, actually. You know, this morning I knew I'd be interviewing you today, and so I made a smoothie for breakfast that followed a recipe of yours that I read in one of your writings. It featured oat milk and bananas and blueberries and arugula and broccoli sprouts. We've been growing broccoli sprouts in our kitchen ever since I read your book. And also in the smoothie was a mixture of ground flax seeds and hemp seeds and chia seeds. Will, in terms of gut health, what are the benefits of eating this way?
You are fueling your gut microbes with premium fuel. These microbes are so interesting. And they're tremendously powerful. There's no question about that. But here's the thing. If you have an unhealthy gut and you make healthy dietary choices by consuming a plant-predominant diet with a wide variety of plants, not only will you enhance that unhealthy gut, but ultimately, you are going to create an environment within your body that is going to promote health. And the flip side of that is true too. If you have a healthy gut and you go a different route and you say, you know what, that plant-based diet is not really for me. I'm going to go this other route. If you are fueling your gut with unhealthy food, you will have an unhealthy body. You will create inflammation because the dietary choices, not only will they affect the makeup of the gut microbes, but more importantly, they are a required part of promoting health throughout the entire body. And this is why the gut microbiome is so important. We can amplify our dietary choices through a predominantly plant-based diet.
Some people find their guts don't tolerate fiber, high fiber diets very well. They get gas, they get bloating when they eat things like well-cooked beans. Now, your book has a whole chapter dedicated to helping people to get over things like bloating and the other symptoms that can be associated with high fiber diets, particularly for people for whom this is new. Will, can you help our listeners who might be struggling with that kind of a problem to know what steps they can take?
This is literally what I do for a living, is take care of people who are suffering with digestive issues. People that have food sensitivity and don't tolerate fiber very well, the reason why is because there's been damage to the gut. Fiber is like exercise for the gut. If you have a damaged gut, that's like having a muscle that needs to be rehabbed. And we can restore function to that. And the way that we do it is by going low and slow. We slowly introduce fiber into our diet over the course of time. And by taking this approach, what we're doing is we're acknowledging that there is a limited functional capacity to what our gut microbes are currently able to do. So we start off with what they're actually able to do, which is a small amount. But next time we come back and we do just a little bit more. And we keep ramping up slowly over the course of time. And just like the person who is bouncing back from an injury, or just like the person who it's January 1st and they enter into the gym and they say, you know what? I want to build myself up this year. I want to be strong. You start low, you go slow, you get stronger, you keep coming back to the table, you do it again, and you will continue to grow. You will restore function. And what you'll do is you'll actually find that foods that you didn't think that you were capable of processing and digesting, not only will you become capable of processing and digesting them, you will crave them. You will want them. They'll be the food that you're absolutely starving to have because you'll be so excited to have them back and your taste buds will change.
Somehow a lot of us have gotten off on the wrong foot. You did with your eating as a young person. The standard American diet, as you've described, is not just bad. It may be the worst diet ever to exist on the planet for human beings. I keep noticing that the amount of fiber that's in animal products is zero. I saw a poll recently and people were asked, where do you get your fiber? A lot of people seem to think, who are answering in the poll, that steak was a good source of fiber. But in fact, as you know, and probably a lot of our listeners know, there is no fiber whatsoever in any animal product, not in any meat product, not in any dairy product, not in any egg product. But there is fiber in all whole plant foods, not in bottled oils, interestingly enough. What does this tell you?
Well, I mean, basically what it tells me, John, is that we've constructed a diet where 90% of our calories in the United States are foods that are effectively devoid of fiber. And what's left over are French fries, which are slathered in oil that they have very little fiber as well. And, you know, this explains the phenomenon in the world that we live in currently, which is that we are starving our gut microbes. We may be overfed, but we're undernourished. And our gut microbes are absolutely starving for fiber. And this is ultimately what we need to change. If we want to get to the root of the problem, this is where we need to go. And this is the opportunity for us to fix our greatest nutritional deficiency.
There is a chiropractor who wrote a book, a rather well-known book, titled Healthy Gut, Healthy You. Now that's an evocative title. It seems attractive. However, his advice is that we all should be eating lots of bone broth and grass-fed beef to have healthy guts. Will, does that advice strike you as scientifically valid?
I'm a believer in science, and there is no science to back up bone broth. There's not even one study. And, well, actually, let me clarify that. We do have one study where the concern was that bone broth may cause heavy metal toxicity. But in terms of bone broth actually enhancing the health of our gut microbiome, that doesn't exist. So how could you advocate for something that has no studies to back it up when there are so many things like dietary fiber that we do have studies and they do point us in the right direction? Why would we not follow and take advantage of the things where we have the science to back it up? Why would we choose a path where there's absolutely no science to support that? And you know, when it comes to grass-fed meat, John, it's a mirage. There's nothing there to back that up. And there is a study that was done in 2014. And in this study, they took a group of people and they exposed them to 5 days of a completely whole food plant-based diet, high fiber, zero animal products. And then they flipped around, they took the same people, and they gave them 5 days of a completely animal product-based diet, meat, dairy, and eggs. You could call it a keto diet, it was 70% fat. You could call it a carnivore diet. There was no plant products. And they had very few carbohydrates. The only carbohydrates were from lactose. So 5 days of a plant-based diet, and here's what they found. In just 5 days, They saw changes to the gut microbiome. And on the plant-based diet, there was enhancement of the families of microbes that produce butyrate. Butyrate is a short-chain fatty acid that I alluded to before that we get from dietary fiber. Now, just for a quick moment, I'd like to summarize some of the benefits of butyrate and other short-chain fatty acids on our body. They enhance the growth of the good microbes inside our colon. They actually directly suppress the bad ones like E. coli, Salmonella, Shigella. They've been shown to repair the tight junctions that line our colon, reducing intestinal permeability. Perhaps the listeners have heard of leaky gut. I just told you the solution to leaky gut. It's dietary fiber producing short-chain fatty acids. They actually are the fuel for our colon. You want a healthy colon? This is the fuel that your colon cells use. They directly suppress colon cancer, the number two cause of cancer death in America. They lower our cholesterol. They enhance insulin sensitivity. They actually optimize our immune system. We have some fascinating studies of the way that short-chain fatty acids may affect the way that our immune system responds to a virus. There's a new study that came out in January of this year that showed us that what was missing in people with severe COVID-19 were the butyrate-producing microbes. These short-chain fatty acids spread throughout the entire body. They have beneficial effects in the heart. We believe that they could prevent coronary artery disease. They have beneficial effects in the brain. There's actually studies that suggest that they cross the blood-brain barrier and have the ability to prevent the formation of beta-amyloid plaques. Beta-amyloid plaques are what cause Alzheimer's disease. Gosh, wouldn't a drug company pay so much money to have a drug that prevented Alzheimer's disease? I just told you how to do it. It's fiber. It's so simple. So in 5 days on a plant-based diet in this study, John, going back to the Lawrence David Nature 2014 paper, they got more short-chain fatty acids because they were consuming fiber and because they enhanced the microbes that produce short-chain fatty acids. Now, when they flipped over to an animal product-based diet, again, 100% meat, dairy, and eggs, zero fiber, the story is disturbing, to be completely frank. There was the explosion in the growth of inflammatory microbes. For example, Bilophila wadsworthia was one of the microbes that grew. This has been associated with the development of inflammatory bowel disease. Another microbe that grew was Allostypes putridinus. Allostypes putridinus has been associated with the development of colorectal cancer. And finally, there was a third population of microbes that grew called Bacteroides. And Bacteroides has been associated with abscesses and with colorectal cancer, inflammatory bowel disease. You just go down the line. There's nothing redeeming there. In 5 days, you are creating the emergence of microbes that have been associated with the development of inflammatory bowel disease, with the development of colorectal cancer, with the development of inflammation throughout the entire body. Not to mention that in this study, John, in just 5 days on an animal product-based diet, they saw the emergence of antibiotic resistance within the gut. Why would that be? Why would you have antibiotic resistance? They weren't taking antibiotics. Well, that's because 70% of the antibiotics in the United States are being administered to the animals as a part of animal agriculture. And then here come the food residues down the food chain and affecting our gut microbes and perhaps contributing to the mass decimation and extinction events that are happening within our gut. The bottom line, John, is that you have the choice. You can choose the anti-inflammatory, butyrate-producing, health-promoting diet by simply consuming plants. Or alternatively, you can choose the animal products, which within 5 days, you will see the emergence of the types of microbes that cause inflammatory bowel disease, that cause colorectal cancer, and that have the potential to breed antibiotic resistance within your own gut.
Well, when you put it that way, the choice is rather clear. In the paper you were referring to, the Lawrence David 2014 study, one of the groups were, or the people for 5 of the days, ate a diet that was all animal products and very high in fat. You refer to it as essentially a ketogenic diet. Today, a lot of people are adopting ketogenic diets, some to lose weight, some in the belief it will lower their risk of cancer, for a whole host of reasons that many people advocate these diets for. But there's a problem because there is no or very little fiber in a ketogenic diet. So some of the people who are adopting these diets say that's not a problem because they take fiber supplements. Will, what do you think of that reasoning? What happens to a person's microbiome if they undertake a ketogenic diet with fiber supplements?
John, the science is very clear when it comes to questions of this variety, and it's not just a ketogenic diet. Whether it's a ketogenic diet, a paleolithic diet, a gluten-free diet, across the board, we end up seeing the same result. When you restrict plants within your diet, your gut microbiome becomes less healthy. It's impossible to do a ketogenic diet without restricting the plants in your diet. You have to. It's inherently part of it because you are doing a low-carb diet. And plants are inherently high-carb foods. And the concern is that you will pay the price in the long term. The studies that exist that the advocates for a ketogenic diet will trumpet and will pound the drum on are short-term studies. Short-term studies with some specially defined benefit, which in each case, I would make the argument that the same benefits that you see from the ketogenic diet are more than reproducible with a plant-based diet. The difference being, what happens after 5, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years on a ketogenic diet? Well, we don't know. We don't have studies to say that. But what we do know is this. We know that on a ketogenic diet, you are consuming a diet which minimizes plant-based diversity, exposing you to increased risk of gut health issues. You are consuming a diet that is high in fat, high in animal products, which is predisposing you to increased risk of not only heart disease, but also cancer. Those are the top two killers. We should never be making dietary choices that increase our risk of the top killers. Our choices should also always be made on the grounds that the diet is helping to protect us and to reduce the risk when it comes to the most dangerous entities that are out there. And this is the reason why, long term, I would never advocate for a ketogenic diet. I would always say, if you want a diet that heals, that's anti-inflammatory, that's designed for aging, that reduces your risk of disease, the answer is clear. The science is overwhelming. That's a plant-based diet.
A lot of people these days who want to enhance their gut health will take probiotic supplements. And the number of these that are available today can be overwhelming. But most of them, the great majority of them, contain only a few strains of microorganisms. They may have vast amounts of the species they provide, but still, they provide only a very limited number of species. While there are thousands, maybe tens of thousands of different species of bacteria that make up our microbiomes. Will, what's your take on probiotic supplements? And do you have any advice for our listeners?
There was a time where probiotics were a part of my practice, a big part. And that was several years ago. And as the science has evolved, it's become very clear to me that the hype is outpacing the science when it comes to probiotics. This is a multi-billion dollar industry. There is an insane amount of money being spent to convince us that the key to optimal gut health is through a pill of living microbes. And that's simply not true. John, you can't take a C-minus gut and supplement your way to an A+. It's just not possible. And if you're trying to do it, you're going to be very disappointed with the results that you get. The solution is to start with diet and lifestyle. The 80,000 pounds of food that you consume during your lifetime, the more than 20 years that you will spend sleeping, the exercise, the humans that you surround yourself with, the social connections that you have, the way that you handle your stress. These are the determinants of a healthy gut. And so from my perspective, I would encourage the listeners to double, triple down on diet and lifestyle. After diet and lifestyle, I have found, to be honest with you, prebiotic supplements to be helpful for a number of people. But when it comes to probiotics, there's a problem. The problem is that you have, and I'm speaking to the listeners at home, you have a unique gut microbiome. There's literally no one on the planet that has the exact same microbiome as you. In fact, if you had an identical twin, you would only share 34% of the same microbes. So with that unique gut microbiome, the problem is that if I am your gastroenterologist and I hand you a probiotic, I'm handing you a generic formula. And I'm crossing my fingers and I'm hoping that when that generic formula comes into contact with your unique gut microbes, that somehow, some way, we'll get lucky and there will be good chemistry and this will give you a health benefit. Sometimes it happens, but the problem is that most of the time it does not, and it ends up being a waste of money. But I do know that according to the rules of nature, when I feed your gut microbes prebiotic fiber, it will enhance the growth of the probiotics that already live inside of you. Why take an external probiotic when you can just feed the ones that you already have living inside of you?
Well, if people want to know what foods are the best sources of prebiotic fiber, I'm thinking about whole grains. I'm thinking about peanuts. I'm thinking about legumes in general. What would you add to that list?
I think that you started off with an excellent starting point. And ironically, those are the two things that are being omitted from the Paleolithic diet. And I think that's a problem. Both legumes and whole grains are an excellent source of fiber, an excellent source of prebiotic polysaccharides, an excellent source of resistant starches, all of which feed the gut microbiome. But beyond those two things, I have an acronym that I shared in my book that allows me to remember what are the foundational foods. And that acronym is FGOALS. F stands for fruit and fermented. G stands for greens and whole grains. O stands for omega-3 superseeds. John, your smoothie qualifies for omega-3 superseeds. Chia, flax, and hemp. A stands for aromatics. I'm talking about the flavor foods. Garlic, onions, shallots, leeks. L stands for legumes. And then S, you alluded to already, John, stands for sulforaphane. Sulforaphane is the phytochemical that you will find in broccoli sprouts. It is an absolute cancer crusher. It is the most powerful cancer-fighting phytochemical that I've ever come across. And you will find in broccoli sprouts 50 to 100 times more sulforaphane than you find in an adult, mature broccoli. And that's why the sprout is such a beautiful thing. I also think that shrooms are beneficial. Now, shrooms technically are not plants, but we will define them as honorary plants. They do contain prebiotics as well. And finally, sea vegetables. Some people call it seaweed. I find that to be a little bit disrespectful. We should show some respect to these sea vegetables. They're incredibly good for us. They have many of the things that are missing from terrestrial plants. Things like, for example, omega-3 fats. Things like, speaking to that DHA and EPA. Things like iodine. So the bottom line is that when you follow this plan, FGOALS, fruit and fermented, greens and whole grains, omega superseeds, aromatics, legumes, broccoli sprouts, sea vegetables, mushrooms, when you follow this plan, now you have a foundation. These are your best friends. And then you grow from there to include even more and get maximum diversity within your diet.
Unfortunately, we are still in the midst of the COVID-19 pandemic. In January of this year, there was a study published in the journal Gut. The title of the study was Gut Microbiota Composition Reflects Disease Severity and Dysfunctional Immune Responses in Patients with COVID-19. Well, are you familiar with this study? And if so, what does it tell us about our gut health and its relationship to our well-being during this pandemic?
John, I'm very familiar with this study. In fact, 4 days after the study came out, I actually sent an email to the people who are on my email list, because when there's cutting-edge research that comes out, I want to share the story. I want my followers to know what's happening, and I want to get the word out. And so this study is very interesting, because basically what they showed is that there was a unique change to the gut microbiome that took place in the setting of COVID-19. That unique change was more pervasive, more clearly present with intensification of the severity of COVID-19. What you saw in this study is that you saw more inflammatory microbes, and you saw a loss of the anti-inflammatory microbes. Now, John, here's what's interesting. A moment ago, we were talking about the effect of the plant-based diet versus the animal-based diet in the study by Lawrence David, Nature 2014. Let's go all the way back to that 2014 article from 7 years ago. And what we find is that on the animal-based diet, you have higher levels of bacterioides and lower levels of a bacteria called Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii. The Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii is a good guy. It produces butyrate, and you get more of it when you eat the plant-based diet. Back in that study, when you ate more plants, you got more Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii. Let's move forward to our gut study, published in January of 2021, looking at the connection between the gut microbes and COVID-19. And what you find is that with severe COVID-19, you see more of the bacterioides and you see less of the Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii. It's an inflammatory pattern, John, and it's conceptually the same pattern that you see with an animal products-based diet. What was missing in the COVID-19 sufferers is they were missing the microbes that produce butyrate. Once again, we found the answer in Lawrence David, Nature 2014. We want to enrich the good guys. We want more Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii. In just 5 days on a plant-based diet in 2014, Lawrence David showed us you can enrich the Fecal Bacterium prausnitzii. In 5 days on an animal-based diet, you can enrich the bacterioides, which is the one that you don't want. The choice is yours, and I know which one I'm going with.
Yes, and you have been going with a healthy diet, you said, ever since, basically, since you met your wife. And before that, you mentioned that you were overweight and had low energy and were depressed. I'm thinking about another study, the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. It's an enormous survey. It links Americans' eating habits and their health. And according to the data from this survey, the more fiber people eat, the less likely they are to be depressed. And the differences in depression scores are dramatic with the amount of fiber in their diets. Well, why would eating more fiber be so strongly linked with less depression and more positive mental states?
John, you're referring to the NHANES data. The NHANES data has been around for close to 20 years. So this type of analysis is not new. But what is new is us being able to connect the dots to answer the question that you're asking me. And ironically, if you asked me this question a year ago, I could have given you my best guess, but I wouldn't have had a completely clear answer. However, in December of 2020, a new microbiome paper was published, and quite fascinating. It showed us that in the gut microbiome, there are changes that occur that are clearly present in the setting of major depression. Now, you could say this is just an association, that it's not necessarily causation. However, what they find is that the changes that occur in the gut microbiome are once again a loss of the anti-inflammatory microbes, a loss of the butyrate producers, an enrichment of the inflammatory microbes. And this affects signaling pathways through GABA, which is a neurotransmitter. So, you know, what's interesting, John, is that the gut and the brain are completely intertwined. They're best friends. If you damage the gut, you are effectively damaging the brain. If you want to optimize your brain function, you should be optimizing your gut function. That's where you should start. And this study that just came out in December of 2020 answers the question for us. In people with major depression, the microbes that are missing are the same microbes that are missing in the people with severe COVID-19. And they just so happen to be the microbes that are enhanced when we consume a high fiber diet. Once again, further evidence to suggest that our microbes are starving and that our greatest nutritional deficiency in the United States is fiber.
Well, one of the many things that I appreciate about you and your work is that you convey complex scientific realities in a way that makes it easy to understand and also easy to put into practice. You break it all down for us. You present it to us piece by digestible piece so we can take the steps that will help us to create incredible shifts in our digestion, ameliorate our symptoms, and enhance our quality of life. I so appreciate your work and how you show us the steps we can take to prevent and even reverse most of the chronic diseases that plague so many of us today. On behalf of Ocean and myself and everyone involved in the food revolution, I want to thank you for your caring and your compassion, for your brilliance and your insights, and for your profound dedication to each of our well-being, and of course, for being with us today.
John, thank you so much for having me. It's a great pleasure. And, you know, it's we mentioned this in the beginning and we circle back to it at the very end. I never dreamed that I would be here to have a conversation with you. You're a hero. You've done amazing work. Your entire family has done amazing work. And it's such a privilege for me just to be a part of it and to connect with these people who are at home listening to us today. And I sincerely hope that it's beneficial to them.
We've been talking with Dr. Will Bulsiewicz, New York Times bestselling author of Fiber Fueled and founder of The Gut Health MD. Will, your research is groundbreaking and your message is refreshing, heartening, and deeply empowering. We are so grateful for your science-driven wisdom, and we thank you for your partnership in the food revolution.
Thank you, Ocean. It's such a pleasure to be here today. I really appreciate it.